A podcast of the cinema. You're Dave White.
And you got all your steps.
True, today I did.
Alonzo Duralde.
Thank you.
You got all your steps in today.
I got up and went for a walk.
A long walk.
Mm-hmm.
A walk up little hills.
Well, I don't know if they're that little. I mean,
did you go up Sweetser?
I went up Sweetser.
And that's a little hill.
Well, it's short, but it's steep.
That's what I'm saying. A steep little hill.
Yes.
And then I walked from the kitchen to the bedroom to the bathroom to the office back to the kitchen. So I got a good 7 or 8 dozen steps today.
Didn't there used to be, like, exercise tips for housewives where it was all about, like, you know, incorporating things into their cleaning regimen or whatever?
Yes. Remember that record? We still have it.
Oh, yeah.
How to Keep Your Husband Happy.
Right. Debbie somebody.
I forget her name. Debbie Drake.
Yes.
Yeah. God. You know what? I have to read the list. On the back of this album, it's an exercise record for ladies from like the 50s or 60s. And the whole point of the record is don't get fat because he's not going to be into it. Which, first of all, is a lie. Secondly,
that's the theme of Burt Bacharach's Wives and Lovers, whatever that's called, movies called, that song.
Is it?
Wives should always be lovers too. Yeah, the, you know,
well, okay,
the hey little girl.
Same thing as being fat.
It's all about like fix your makeup and, you know, greet him at the door, not looking like a dish rag, you know.
Right.
The implicit thing.
You can still be chunky.
In addition, I maybe.
For so. That loving.
I guess as long as you've had your hair set, you're right.
Well, on Linoleum Nights. I got to read that list because the list is extremely offensive. It has no profanity in it, which is one of the features of Linoleum Nights, which we haven't started yet.
No, it's happening very soon.
The podium, the tripod just showed up.
Yes.
And you spent all day yesterday being frustrated over how to get a closed group on.
Which I finally figured out with the help of several erstwhile Facebook users. It's very confusing. But yeah, so that's happening. I had a stomach flu this week too, so that kind of put our
that's
off
your
schedule.
It's your baby excuse.
You have one. Yeah, because when you're sick, you're such a Spartan.
Bring me a...
Please.
I'm ready to do Linoleum Nights. If you are a Patreon subscriber, that's what you get at the $16 and up level.
Yes. Our new, it's going to be a Facebook Live. We're also going to record the audio so we can make it a thing.
You can watch it live on Facebook or you can listen to it like you're listening to this.
It's a subscription thing. So patreon.com/linoleumknife if you're interested.
And that will be your ad for Patreon today. You want LKTV, you want Linoleum Knife and Fork, you want
stunning prizes.
Even I trip over the name of this show sometimes.
Linoleum.
You want Linoleum Knights? Things, merch, special moments. Last night we had a special moment.
Yes, we had a club meeting, group viewing of John Carney's 2016 Sing Streets.
We all Google Hanged Out.
Yes.
And then talked about it.
Yes.
And mostly everyone just said, thanks for not showing a bummer.
I know.
We've had 2 months in a row where we showed happy, upbeat, optimistic films.
Yes.
Which seems to be everybody's jam lately.
Right now, I think, yes.
So, the riddle of the model.
I
wish we had a happy, optimistic movie to talk about this weekend. This show. Because everything is kind of a everything is kind of a bummer or terrible.
Yes, or both.
Or both. Like, what's... Wait, I'm looking at my list. Okay. Here are the... Okay, let's start with the two goodish ones.
Okay, sure. We'll knock them off.
Love Song.
Yes.
One word. Love Song.
What is the deal with So Young Kim?
What is her dang deal, anyway?
I mean, like, is she... is she born in the States? Like, are her parent? Did her parents come from Korea? Do we know what the was she born in Korea?
She's, I think, born here.
Okay,
but yeah, she's Korean. She made In Between Days,
right,
and a couple others. The titles I'm blanking on. This is her third or fourth feature.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote it with her husband, Bradley Rust Gray.
Right.
And he is the director of the terrible Jack and Diane.
Yes.
Which is like lesbian werewolves, I can't remember.
Yeah, now. Of one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
A little cameo by Kylie.
Yes, but it's mainly Riley Keough, who stars in Love Song, yes. And I forget who else.
Me too.
And I'm sure that actress would rather it that way.
So now they get another, they get a lesbian-ish do-over.
Yes.
Here. With Riley Keough.
Mm-hmm.
Keough or Keough?
I don't know.
I never know how to say her name. She's Elvis's granddaughter.
Yes. And she's up for a Spirit Award this year for American Honey.
That's right. Because she's really good in American Honey.
She is. That movie bugged
and
me.
She's
but
really
I liked
good
about
on that
it.
Show, The Girlfriend Experience.
She is. She is a talented actress.
Yeah. I'm happy that she's just not going to flail around. You know, when your grandfather is Elvis Presley.
Right.
And you got that money.
Well, there is something to the skips a generation thing. I don't know.
Well, I mean, Lisa Marie had a pop singles, you know, like a, not singles, a pop music almost career.
Right. Well, it's kind of like how you have John Barrymore, and then you have John Barrymore Jr., who didn't really do that much. And then you have Drew, you know. Yeah. So it's like sometimes there's a pause in the middle, and then they're back up, you know.
But yeah, she's really good.
Yeah.
And in this film, she plays a frustrated, lonely young mother.
Yes.
Who is, she's got a three-year-old.
Right.
The husband is never around. He Skypes in.
Played by Cory Fukunaga.
Played by Cary Fukunaga.
Carrie or Corey?
Carrie.
Carrie, okay. Yeah. Bad eyesight.
And she's restless.
Mm-hmm.
She's lonely and sad. So she takes a little road trip, goes up New York area.
Mm-hmm.
Poconos, I think, is where it says they are at one point. And she meets her old college friend, best friend from college.
Right.
Played by Jenna Malone.
Mm-hmm.
And they quickly fall into that old sort of easy, you know, best girlfriends kind of affection. And they eat and they drink and the little kid's there and they take care of the little kid and they go to a rodeo and they flirt with the cowboys and they drink more and more. And then they kiss and then they spend the night together. And we're to understand that this has never happened before.
Right.
And the next day, Jenna Malone is like, well, gotta go, bye!
See ya!
That was fun, kind of weird, but that's cool, whatever, let's go. See ya! And Riley Keough's like, wait, that was... would enjoy more.
Yes.
Please. And that's it.
Right.
3 years later, second half of the movie, Riley Keough is going to Jenna Malone's wedding.
Right.
To a dude. The word lesbian is never mentioned.
Mm-mm.
Only, you know, we had one night.
I'm reminded of the old...
A brief encounter,
yes,
if you will.
Two ships. I'm reminded of the old Pauline Kael line about the French Dion Curie's film from the 80s, Entre Nous, which was a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
That was like Siskel and Ebert raved about that movie. I remember going to see it. Like, that was a big art house hit, and no one talks about it. I don't even know if it's on DVD. Mm. Anyway, but Pauline stars Isabelle Huppert and Miu Miu as these two really close friends in post-World War II France. And,
yeah.
Anyway, Pauline Kael referred to it as a movie about two women not having a lesbian affair.
And that's pretty much what this is.
Yeah, this is the what doesn't happen is kind of is what shrouds this film.
It reminded me of Old Joy in a way, where you've got two people who were once very close, who are now, you know,
drifting apart.
That drift of adulthood.
Yeah,
where you might naturally fall out of a close friendship just because of time and distance and
circumstance, you know,
circumstances. And you're moving in other directions.
Yeah.
And, but this is complicated by the fact that one of them was hoping,
right,
for something more.
Right.
And so they meet up again, and you can tell everything is a little bit off because there's this wedding happening, but Riley Keough is not part of the wedding party.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I know about the ladies and the wedding parties.
Yeah.
Your best girlfriend, she's in that wedding party.
Right.
Riley Keough is a guest.
Yeah.
And when she shows up, Jenna Malone is like, it's so nice to see you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that...
And then any kind of conversation... I'm sorry, what?
I was going to say, it's not even just that this is a movie about a thing that doesn't happen. It's about a movie... It's about a thing that doesn't happen and that they never really talk about,
right,
why it does or doesn't happen.
Right. Then there's the moment where Riley Keough is saying, I need time to talk to you. I have to talk to you. She's like, and Jenna Malone's like, I'm sorry, I'm really busy. There's a wedding rehearsal dinner happening and there's a bachelorette party and there's a million people around and I don't, and then she drops that subtle little thing. She's like, I never hear from you.
Go.
Mm-hmm. So me being chill and distant, I turn it back on you. I never hear from you.
And you are entirely responsible for our communication because my dialing finger is broken.
Here's the thing. It's this movie about this, told in the most minimalist dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about body language,
yeah,
and gesture and nervous hands and, you know, long stretches of silence and looking at each other. And
when I posted your interview on the Wrap, I found
my interview,
your review on the Wrap. Okay. I found an interview that the Wrap had done with the two actresses at Sundance.
I see.
In 2016 when the film premiered, and they referred to So Young Kim as the Queen of Silence.
Yeah, the dialogue that does exist feels improvised.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that the script itself is sort of like, then you move over here and you look this way at her, you know, like, here's what you're thinking.
Right. I'm sure maybe the outline.
Maybe you'll speak.
The outline is all motivation, and whether or not there's dialogue is, you know, dealer's choice.
So I like this. There are moments where I feel like it teeters into inertia, but not always and not often.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
Hmm.
And their performances are really good. And I'm especially, like I said, I'm especially into Riley Keough in this movie.
Hmm.
And of course, MVP Rosanna Arquette shows up as grumpy mom of Jenna the
Bride. Yeah.
Who cannot be satisfied by anything. And she has a very short amount of time on screen, but you remember her.
My favorite mother of the bride, well, either Carol Burnett in A Wedding or Deborah Winger in Rachel Getting Married.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are some great ones.
That's always like the choice role. The mother of the bride, mm-hmm. you know, coming in and being like, it looks nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
It is, you know, my jam is the silent, quiet film.
Yes.
If you're into that kind of thing and you want a little heartbreak, because that's where it is.
I have heard complaints from people who think that it is kind of a throwback in terms of its character's reticence to deal with queerness.
Well,
but I think that maybe we're assuming too much on the part of the world right now.
I believe
and
we are.
And this sort of thing, like this sort of thing doesn't still happen when I'm sure
Here's
it does.
Here's what I said in my review for The Wrap. There is still the presumption and the cultural enforcement of heterosexuality.
Yes.
It is an easier path than taking the time to do the sort of destabilizing work,
right,
to figure out what it is you want and who you are. Especially if you've already, gotten married and had a kid.
Right.
If you've already established, the fact, hey, everybody, look, I like dudes or I like girls or whatever. Yeah. Oh, wait, maybe I changed my mind.
If you're on that center point of the Kinsey spectrum where it's like, okay, I like this guy enough and marrying a guy is what I'm supposed to do and right. I've been told I'm supposed to do. So
and this
I
guy's
guess,
nice enough and, oops, now I'm pregnant and there you go.
Bam.
Well, speaking of silence, the red turtle.
Yes.
There ain't nobody talking in that movie.
No.
There's a hay. There's some hollers.
Mm-hmm.
People holler every once in a while. And at one point someone says, hey.
This is one of the nominees for Best Animated Feature at the Oscars this year. It is a Studio Ghibli film, but it is from a Dutch animator whose name I don't have in front of me.
Why don't you turn off that recording and I'll look it up, because we don't want to be those people who don't have their
David
facts.
David Dervelt or something? hang on. I'll get this. Michael Dudok de Wit. I said it on What the Flick this week and then I couldn't remember it.
And you know that's how you pronounce
I don't
it.
Know that that's how you pronounce it. I'm.
Is this his first film?
Why you got to be peppering me with questions? I don't know.
Do we need to pause again while you look up the
thing?
I
think it's his first feature.
Why is no one ready?
Yes, I know. It is his first feature.
Okay.
He has directed several shorts beforehand, and I believe he is the first non-Japanese director to make a film for Ghibli.
The film is about a man who is stranded on an island.
Yes.
And he builds a raft, which I think is fairly thoughtless of him. I think that what you do on an island first is build yourself some shelter and get yourself some food. But we never see him doing that. We see him lying on his back on the beach, waking up that way every morning. And I'm thinking, dude, it's going to rain. It's a tropical island.
You're going to get sunburned.
Plus you're going to get sunburned. Yeah, and he's just building that raft. And he builds the raft and he takes it out of the water. And a thing, an unseen thing, cracks it in half.
Yeah.
And he does it again. And the thing cracks it in half again. And he does it a third time. And this time he sees that it's this giant red turtle breaking his raft. Yes. Intentionally breaking his raft.
Right. Keeping him on the island.
And then he kills it. He kills it. It's like you kind of can't blame him.
Well, sure.
That's the thing that's keeping him from escaping the island.
Yes.
And then a magical thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I just say what happens in the it's a magical thing.
Yeah, I mean it's. We could tell you every single thing that happens in this movie, and you'd still need to see it.
Yeah. He kills it, and it lies there on its back for a couple days. And then he realizes that it isn't fully dead.
Right.
So he starts sprinkling it with water to see if it needs water. And then it cracks open. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, I'm getting these facts all wrong. He does kill it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it cracks open. And what happens is, inside the turtle is a lady. And he sprinkles her with water, and she wakes up.
Right.
And then they have a baby. And they spend the next 20 years raising the baby on the island.
Right.
Turns out this kid is basically a turtle in human form.
Right.
So instead of a woman inside a red turtle, there's now a red turtle inside a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And then things happen. And no one talks.
Yes.
It's three human beings on a fairly sparse island, and this animation is very, very spare.
Yes.
This is not the same sort of lush Ghibli aesthetic that you've come to know.
Right, even though it's set on an
it's
island.
It's very beautifully.
In the ocean. It's not like Ponyo or something.
Yeah, it's very beautifully animated. It looks gorgeous.
It is, but you're right. It's spare by comparison. But it's very much that kind of cell watercolor, you know, like
yes,
old school, just
yes,
beautiful animation.
Yeah, this is not digital stuff at all.
No, and if it is, they're hiding it well.
I mean, yeah,
because even some later Miyazaki does include some digital stuff, but he doesn't, you know, use it as a crutch or anything. This is a phenomenal film, and after you saw it, we kind of talked about what happened exactly, and you know, I think it's open to interpretation, and those interpretations can lead to whatever metaphors you want to read into it, but I think just on its own as this kind of fable, you know, whatever you take away from it, you know, it's just a gorgeous piece of work.
I'm going to tell you that I took away nothing. I watched it today,
mm-hmm,
before recording this.
Mm-hmm.
And based on what happens, the action that happens,
mm-hmm,
I don't know what I'm supposed to think about it. It just looks pretty. I don't know if I'm supposed to think that he did everything wrong. I don't know if the gender politics are good. I don't know if the point is, you know, we all go back to the sea. I don't know. What? I don't know.
Well, look.
I don't know what I'm supposed to think about this film.
It's like when you were pursuing me, and I kept trying to raft away from you, and then you kept breaking my raft, and then I had to kill you, and then you crawled out, and then we fell in love. I don't know. I don't know either what it's about.
I'm going to tell you straight up right now, listeners. There was no pursuing going on.
I'm kidding.
There was a trip to see the bridges of Madison County after a couple other movie hangouts. And I said, hey, what's up? Are we going on dates? Are these dates? What do you think about this? Are these dates that we're on? Because if they are, great. If they're not, cool. What do you think? And you said, eh. And I said, fine. We're buddies.
You don't have to tell this whole story again.
I think the people have a right to know. The truth.
They've heard it.
They can handle the truth. Listen, we have new people out there.
Okay, great.
Who don't know the beautiful love story of us. I was all right. I was like, yeah, fine, sure, we're friends. You're real cute, but that's all right. All my friends are real cute.
I choose my friends for their looks and my enemies for their intelligence.
Right. So then you became my enemy. No. And then later you realized you couldn't live without me. The end.
Yeah, fine.
Okay. So, Yeah. This looks really nice. It's very tranquil.
Mm-hmm.
The first 20 minutes caused me a fair amount of anxiety.
Hmm.
Mostly because...
He hadn't built a shelter yet.
He hadn't built a shelter. He was. I didn't see where the food was supposed to come from. And I, and there's a scene that is relevant later
mm-hmm.
In the film. But there's a scene where he trips and falls off a ledge into a pool that is completely surrounded by steep rock, and there is no escape.
Mm-hmm.
And his only escape is to swim down, down, down into this tight, tight, pitch black.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Little crevasse. And then hopefully get himself back out into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrifying. It's like that movie, The Descent, where they're trapped with the monsters in the tunnels. And the tunnels are no bigger around than a air duct vent in an action movie.
Right.
But tighter, because you're squozed in there and just maybe going to die.
Yeah, that's...
That scene in the beginning, it's an animated feature that had me going,
no.
Like, whatever phobia about being trapped somewhere you might have, it's going to be...
Triggered. Well,
the first 20 minutes
it happens
of this film.
Quickly, and then it's done.
And then it's done. Yes.
No, because actually, I was curious about, is this the kind of movie to take kids to? And Christy said Nick Lemire loved it. So,
oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, Nick is a sophisticated.
He has been taken to a lot of movies at this point in his life. True.
Mommy has taken him to a lot of things and has actively worked on his film education.
I suppose so.
So that kid already has opinions about things.
True.
When I was 6 years old going to the movies, I was just like, yay, I'm at the movies.
It was
candy.
A movie.
It was a movie. I'm so happy because of a movie. And Nick Lemire is like, seen better.
I saw A Cure for Wellness.
Say it right.
But
say it right. Say wellness properly.
A Cure for Wellness.
Wellness. Okay, so here's a stupid story. So I'm Christmas shopping in a mall like 2 years ago. I go into the Aveda store to buy like some lip balm or something for your Christmas stocking.
Mm-hmm.
And I get up to the counter, and the dude who's checking me out, taking my money, goes, it's like some wellness. I was like, what? It's like some wellness. I said, I don't understand what you're talking about. What are you even saying? He's like, wellness. I was like, okay. So it turns out that, I don't know if they still do this, Aveda has this thing where you pay them and they give you a little neck rub or something like that. And you get like a wheatgrass shot or something. Nothing that makes any sense.
Wellness.
It's like,
oy, oy, oy.
Maybe they still do this. Maybe Aveda still offers wellness at the checkout.
I have no
idea.
And
you pay like 20 or 30 bucks extra for that
for
shot
wellness.
Of wellness and the little brief tantric massage or something. But I was baffled. And to this day, first of all, I've never been back inside an Aveda store.
I would rather...
But when I do go back inside an Aveda store, I really want to be offered
wellness
so that I can say, not today, no wellness for me.
I would rather have spent $20 for a shot of wheatgrass juice than to have spent 2 hours and 26 minutes watching A Cure for Wellness.
I didn't go. I didn't want to go. And I thought I would go and buy a ticket and make it up, you know, just before this show. Mm-hmm. But then you came home and you were like, and yeah. Then all the reviews came in and there's not, no one likes it. And
you know how when we talk about movies like The Room or After Last Season, yeah. They sort of feel like somebody going, well, these are things you do in a movie. This is what a movie looks like. This is what a movie sounds like. People enter a room and have conversations about things. I mean, Gore Verbinski is not at that level of outsider art, but Gore Verbinski does not know how to do a sort of stylish thriller the way he's trying to do here.
Yeah.
This is the guy that made, you know, the most of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies and The Lone Ranger and Mouse Hunt, you know, and he is, he has the idea of like, oh, it's going to be this exclusive Swiss spa and it's all going to be sort of, you know, everything's going to look like it's from the 1930s and, you know, I'm going to cast Dane DeHaan so he'll look all sort of pale and drawn and, you know, quizzical looking like a Kafka hero. And so there's all these trappings that work and like the art direction is spot on and flawless, but there's, the story is drivel. And it takes so long to get where it's going that you have A, already figured it out by that point, and B, long since stopped caring. So Dane DeHaan plays this, like, you know, up-and-coming Wall Street, you know, type A dude. And he's just, you know, like gotten a promotion, but his bosses are like, well, we know you cheated and had, this is how you got the promotion, and so we're gonna bust you unless you go to this spa in Switzerland and get our CEO to come back home, because we can't do this merger without him. And the CEO has written them this letter being like, ugh, I realize my life was false and I'm never coming back and blah blah blah. So he gets there and he's trying to see the CEO and he can't see the CEO. And meanwhile, even when he tries to leave, there's a car accident. So they make him stay at the spa with a broken leg. So he's trudging around the spa on these crutches, trying to figure out what's going on and trying to see the CEO. And everybody's making him drink this water. And why are there eels? And, you know,
why are there eels?
And that becomes a plot point later.
Okay.
And there's this girl sort of flitting about like Ophelia, you know, who apparently has spent her entire life in the spa and, you know, just...
Oh, like Space Teen in the other movie that we were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Kind of.
Spent his whole life in the space.
Right.
Bubble on Mars.
Yes. So, yeah.
Brittle candy bones.
Exactly. This just... It just gets more and more involved and less interesting. And you can tell, like, he's really going to knock you out with these big set pieces of, like, you know, oh, all these people in sort of the hospital gowns waltzing in a circle, you know, and that kind of thing. And it's, you can tell the movie is, because it's a movie that is designed to be constantly unsettling you and freaking you out, whether intentionally or unintentionally, it does this thing where basically, because it's a spa, you start seeing bodies that are old or fat. And you're supposed to
That's repulsive.
Exactly. You're supposed to be all, ew, gross about
it. Ew, gross, fat people.
Yeah, and it's like, really? Eat it, movie, you know.
That's you're not going to keep your husband happy that way.
Clearly not.
Unless you're me and fat.
So it is, a waste of time. Do not bother.
So what's supposed to be the point of this film?
It's just supposed to be creepy and scary and, you know, you find out nefarious things that are going on at this spa and why and what the ultimate goal is and blah, 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 meow.
But, like, why was it made? Is it based on a book?
Nope.
An original script by Gore Verbinski.
I don't know that he wrote it, but he has a story credit.
Well, but what's the... I mean, but what? Why was it made?
It was
what story is he trying to tell?
I think Gore Verbinski wanted to make a, like, cool, stylish sort of Euro... Like, not Hammer exactly, but, it's this sort of, you know, kind of European... Like, I saw Repulsion once kind of thriller, you know.
I see.
And
I guess I'm asking is, does it have anything to say about the world or life?
Oh,
or
heavens no.
Anything. Okay.
Not in the least.
That's everything I need to know. Can't wait. Is there anything, I mean, okay, you know me that like 50% of my enjoyment is how something looks.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes more than that. Would I enjoy looking at it?
You would enjoy looking at it, but you would get really irritated by how badly it's written.
Okay. All right.
I always liked Celia Imrie, who plays a character named Victoria Watkins, which is my sister's married name. There is also a character in the movie.
Does Victoria know this little fact about this film?
I mentioned it on Facebook. I don't know if she saw it. There is also one of the New York, one of the business people is named Hank Green, who is the name of a friend of ours.
A friend of ours named Hank.
So it's just weird to have,
last name Green.
It's random enough to see a movie where somebody has the character name of someone you know, but there were two in this one.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I would not spend the money. If it comes on cable, you might take a look at it and literally just look at it.
Sound down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We forgot. Okay. So
here's how much this movie meant to us. We saw it.
A film came out last week called A United Kingdom.
Yes.
Starring Rosamund Pike and David Oyelowo.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by
Ama Asante.
Okay, yes. Who made Belle? Which was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Belle was fine. Belle was pretty good.
This is another period movie about British racism.
Yeah, yeah. But
which is not that's not a fecund topic, but
and it's a true story.
Yes.
The prince who would become the king of Botswana.
Right. Which at the time was called Boshwaraland or something.
Something longer.
Yeah. This is the 19...
It's just after World War II.
That's right. Just after World War II, yes.
And he's in England and he meets Rosamund Pike.
Right.
And they kind of quickly fall for each other.
Yeah. Despite the fact
that... And for the first 10 minutes, I was kind of stoked on this movie because her sister is Lady Edith.
Yes. Wearing glasses. It took me a second. I'm going, who is that? Who is that?
Oh, I saw her right away. I saw her, and I was like, it's Lady Edith with the googly eyes.
I didn't recognize her without the googly eyes stuck to her. Dave's favorite Tumblr for a long time was Lady Edith with googly eyes.
Yeah. Well, it was the best. That's why it was my favorite. So... Then Lady Edith goes away.
Right.
And it's all Rosamund Pike and David Oyelowo.
Two actors I love.
Really enjoy both of them. I've seen them do really cool work in other films.
Yes.
This story is true and has a real point.
Yes.
About the nastiness and structural, institutional nature of racism.
Yeah. And interestingly, it's not like all the white people are despicable and all the black people are saintly.
No.
Because he brings her home to Botswana as the queen.
And half of those folks are jerks too.
And his immediate relatives are like,
what are you doing?
Are you kidding me with this? Are you even serious
right
now?
For different reasons, obviously, but... Yeah, no one's really on their side.
No. And they get caught up in the England basically doesn't want to piss off South Africa, who is, instituting apartheid, but South Africa's got all the gold and all the uranium, so England can't afford to blow them off. So they don't want to get involved with, these sort of internecine hassles going on.
Is it
in the
pronounced
continent.
Internecine or internecine?
I don't know.
I think it's the latter.
Fine. They don't want to get involved with the internecine goings on of the continent, but they're certainly not in favor of these guys. They're gonna kowtow to South Africa. All of this is potentially fascinating.
Let's cut to the chase. This movie is boring as balls.
Such a snooze.
I could not wait for it to be over.
And when it is over, you get as with every biopic, you get to the pictures of the real people in the closing credits.
Yeah.
And you're thinking ooh, what a fascinating story. Someone should make
should make a documentary about this. Yeah.
Because it's an amazing story that this guy is willing to risk so much despite his position in this country to marry a white you know, outsider and bring her home and make her the his, you know, kind of co-monarch in this really fascinating period of history. And just the way that, like, Africa was set up where, like, even though he was the king of the country, you know, if he wanted to go into the whites-only hotel, you know, he could, but through the service entrance, you know. I mean, just insane stuff like that. But the movie is so boring and just sucks all the life out of everything, out of this fascinating, potentially fascinating story. You can't even believe how dreary it is and how great it could have been.
It just...
The material will only take you so far.
It moves like a barge. A barge of importance.
Mm-hmm.
And as the barge barged through my brain, oh, so slowly and importantly,
and with a
I thought, it feels very important for me to continue watching the barge move.
With a better script, Pike and Oyelowo would be such a charismatic and dynamic screen couple.
Uh-huh.
But you get so few moments of this sort of genuine passion of, like, why they were able to make these enormous sacrifices on behalf of each other to be together, to be a couple, when everyone is telling them not to. And it would have made so much sense in a lot of ways. Or, like, be like, oh, you know what? You're great, but this isn't going to work. Like, you have to believe in this sort of overriding passion to understand why they made the choices they made. And the movie never gives you any of that.
Nope.
It's so exasperating. This is, you know, when they talk about, like, you know, you remake the bad movies and get them right. Like, this is a movie that I would love to see somebody take another crack at in 10 or 20 years and tell it the right way, because this is just stiff.
And then there's A Great Wall. It's about monsters, and Matt Damon is miscast. It's bad. I fell asleep twice. The end.
I can't totally hate on The Great Wall, because I was entertained by a great deal of it. Probably not in the way that I was necessarily supposed to be. I mean, this was this hugely expensive China-US co-production, and it's directed by the great Zhang Yimou, and it's to me, the enjoyment I got out of it was like watching an old Ultraman episode, because it's about, you know, these colorfully clad warriors fighting off, you know, the Rick Moranis,
like, they've each got a different color,
Devil Dog and Ghostbusters,
like the Power Rangers.
Yeah.
You know, different country, but
which, yeah. And that's, I mean, you know, like, if you look at, have you ever seen footage of, like, aircraft carriers where people are, like, wearing, like, green or orange, like that's a thing where you color code your squadrons, but they're wearing this sort of medieval armor, and yet it's still somehow also a primary color. And it's like, I don't even know how you did that. But.
Well, it's not the real life. That's why.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how that happened. It's the reason there are alien space dinosaur dogs attacking everyone.
I did think the alien queen was kind of cool, and the way she would sort of, like, vibrate her head and communicate to all of her minions was kind of neat. I don't know. It's redonkulous, to unpack a word I don't use anymore.
Like,
but
the controversy over Matt Damon's casting as, you know, oh, here's a white guy who's going to save everything. Yes, that is stupid and wrong and racist. However, at the same time, this movie weighs nothing and is about people fighting space alien dinosaur dogs.
Let's be clear.
It's for children. It's a children's film.
It is. It's a monster movie for 8-year-olds.
I can't invest any more time in complaining about Matt Damon's presence in this movie, as stupid and wrong as it is.
I will say this. I have seen where people were like, oh, I can't believe Matt Damon's playing an Asian. That's offensive. Like,
well, he's not.
He's playing an Irishman.
He's not good at that either.
Yeah, terribly. His accent comes and goes like mad. But yeah, the premise is that it's these European guys who have gone to China to try and get gunpowder, because that's new and different. And, you know, and yes, obviously this is the sort of thing you do when you have an international co-production and, you know, like, each country puts up their biggest star. But, you know, when a movie is set on the Great Wall and there's, like, a white guy who's key to the plot, it's a little jarring, you know. I totally understand it, and people should complain about it, and this movie should be smarter in a million different ways, including incorporating, you know, this its handful of white cast members. And the funny thing is, for a movie that was obviously designed to be a big hit in both the U.S. and China, it didn't work in either country. Like, it got terrible reviews in China. It didn't make money in China, and it's not making money here. Like, I was reading somewhere today that, like, it would have to clear $70 million in the U.S. to break even. And it, you know, I think the four-day holiday weekend is something like $21, $22 million. Like, okay, it's not going to do it. So it's, you know, it goes to show you that these, I'm sure in some conference room somewhere, they put together all these things where it was like, you know, China money, U.S. money, Zhang Yimou, Matt Damon, you know, da, 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 Andy
Lau. Also, the wall talks.
No.
Its name is Bricky. And it talks. It says, hey, Matt.
And if you get...
I'm here to help protect everybody from the space dinosaur dog aliens.
And you can get...
That's me, the Great Wall.
It's in a Happy Meal. No, they do some fun...
It sure is great to be a big wall to help protect my special friends. That's what happens in the film.
They do some fun stuff with
the
wall.
That's not at all what happens in the film, but it could have.
It might as well have, yeah.
Everything else in this film is of that sort of... thing, there's
secret panels in the wall. There's these big, like, blades that come swinging around like giant scissors. That was kind of cool.
Yes,
it's totally dumb. I can't in any way say this movie is not totally dumb.
Yes,
but again, if you're in the mood for a monster movie for 8 year olds,
if you're 8 years old,
why not?
Sure,
is that it?
Yeah,
what's your DVD pick?
Police.
Yes, explain what that is.
It's an old film with Isabelle Huppert and Gerard Depardieu, and it's from great French director Maurice Pialat.
Yes. It's coming out on Blu-ray this week.
I'm stoked. They just showed up in the mail the other day. It was very exciting.
My pick this week, I wanted to do one of the good old Zhang Yimou movies. And
oh yeah, remember back in the 90s?
Yeah.
When he made movies that were in the art house and people were like, this guy's great.
Mm-hmm. You'd be amazed.
He has nothing left to prove. Already proved that he was a great filmmaker, and now he's proving that he's a hack.
You would be amazed at how many of those movies are not, like, in print in the U.S. Yeah. Like Raise the Red Lantern, Judo, Red Sorghum. Could not find them on Amazon. So I'm going with The Story of Kyuju.
Okay.
Which is kind of a social satire about life in China, starring Gong Li as a farmer's wife who is trying to get justice for her husband and has to grapple with the layer upon layer upon layer of Chinese bureaucracy. It is darkly funny, and she's really good and just sort of dogged in her pursuit of justice. And it's a movie I like a lot, so check it out.
How about some letters?
Let's.
Okay, here's one. This is from Clint. Hey, I saw Split, and I loved it. I run hot and cold with M. Night Shyamalan, but I feel that he's back to the Sixth Sense level of storytelling with this movie. The cinematography is wonderful, and it's just a movie about the performance of the actors. I have no experience with people suffering from dissociative identity disorder. Identity disorder, let me pronounce that properly. Formerly known as multiple personality disorder. So I don't know if the portrayal is an accurate one. Just from an acting standpoint, James McAvoy making these personalities distinct without uttering a word was pretty great. The voice of the little kid was a bit trite. Trite's not the word I would use. He continues, but I know kids that speak in that manner. Yeah, you know what? I don't want to be around those kids either. You got a kid? Do you have a kid who talks like James McAvoy in Split when he's being the child? Keep that kid away from me. I don't want to hear from that kid.
Be nice.
That's not a kid I like. That's how he sounded.
Isn't there like a slight lisp or something?
A little bit, yeah.
I didn't see it, so I don't know.
The only part I didn't like in the film was the scene with Betty Buckley and Shyamalan having the highbrow, lowbrow conversation, which seemed out of place. Yeah, they do have that conversation, and it's as irritating as James McAvoy behaving like a child. Since this email won't be read until June of 2018, ha 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 ha, ha you got wronged. Let's unpack the ending a bit. If you happen to read this in the nearer future, here come spoilers. Is there anyone listening to this show who has not yet seen Split that wants to see Split? Turn your volume down for the next 30 seconds.
Or hit that 15-second jump button on your...
timer me for 30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds starting now.
The ending is not a typical Shyamalan twist per se, but there is a reveal that this movie is linked to the Unbreakable movie universe. Oh, do we think it has a universe now?
Apparently.
All right. Well, I suppose it's gonna. I've been wanting a sequel to Unbreakable for a long time.
Ten
and to
seconds.
Have this sequel be revealed in Split excited me, and not the other six people in a theater that holds 150.
Time.
Then he has a question about how that... that reveal will be incorporated into any further films.
I see.
Yes. He says he is now his own Stan Lee.
Shyamalan is or Clint
is? I'm glad
is.
You enjoyed the film, Clint. I'm going to continue to not enjoy it. All right. Whoa.
What?
Okay, this is a letter that it's full of YouTube links that we're supposed to look at, and so that's requiring.
Well,
I'll do it later.
You don't have to watch them. You can read around it. It makes sense.
Oh, look. It's from Noah.
Noah. I thought Noah wasn't even listening anymore.
Listen. Noah does what Noah wants.
Clearly.
And sometimes Noah is going to listen, maybe, and sometimes he's not.
Mm-hmm.
I think he floats on the wind.
Mm-hmm.
That is what I think about Noah.
Like flatulence.
Here's the letter. Hello, all caps. I'm very tired. I just finished cooking some amazing vegan fried chicken and vegan waffles for my family. I did all the cooking, washed all the dishes, and cleaned up the mess in the living room. I don't know what that means. I tried vegan. I've had vegan fried chicken. It ain't bad.
What is it?
It tastes more like McNuggets than anything else. Mm. You really need a good batter. If you're going to make vegan fried chicken.
What are you battering?
It's tofu-ish.
I see.
It's textured protein. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so. You want a really good batter.
Mm.
Because the inside, let's be real, it does not taste like chicken. Anyway, here's a list of his favorite films of 2016.
Okay.
Number 10, Southside with You /Fences/ Don't Breathe. Three-way tie for 10.
Okay. That's cheating, but they're all good.
Yeah, I like all those movies. Number 9, The Lobster.
Yeah.
Number 8, Certain Women.
Yeah.
Number 7, 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, Nocturnal Animals.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5, Hell or High Water.
Okay.
Number 4, Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, Amy Adams' best performance.
Case could be made.
I would agree with that.
Sure.
Number 3, La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, Silence. Whoa, ooh. Noah. Iconoclast. Number 1, Moonlight. I've seen this 9 times.
Wow.
It keeps getting better. I'm going to bed now. Goodbye. Love you, Dave. I've never loved Alonzo. But now my Do Not Love Alonzo meter has increased because I just watched Manchester by the Sea and I loved it.
Yeah, well, not enough to put it in your top 12.
Then I watched Alonzo's take on What the Flick. Mr. Duralde, I'm convinced that your soul is tainted with black, hot, nasty tar. I'm going to sleep now. Good night. Well, you know, Noah, sometimes good people don't like good movies. And that's what happened
sometimes
in the case of Alonzo Duralde.
Sometimes people are right. Even when everyone else is easily swayed by propaganda, the prevailing mood.
Time for one more.
Let's.
Let me see what I got here. Oh, wait. Do I even have another one?
Well, in my there are ones that I sent you previously that you haven't gotten to. Or you could read the one with the YouTube clips, because you don't have to watch them. It's basically apparently a series of commercials in the UK with Harvey Keitel playing the role that he played in Pulp Fiction.
Well, here I have another one.
Okay, fine.
This is from Ryan. I hope this message finds you both well. My name is Ryan, and I've been listening to your show for several months now after hearing Alonzo mention it on What the Flick. I must say that I have greatly enjoyed myself, and I like hearing your unique perspectives on things and getting information on a broader scope of films than seen on many other podcasts.
Well, thank you.
You also made probably the most even-handed and interesting podcast on Rogue One that I've listened to, and I listened to at least 4 different Star Wars dedicated podcasts weekly.
Speaking of Rogue Ones and Ryans, our friend Ryan Downey, who did the Rogue One podcast with us, has just started his own podcast.
It's called Pop Curse.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he has put up a sort of origin episode, episode 0. It's up on iTunes now, but you can go ahead and subscribe, and then when more episodes pop up, you'll be keeping up with it.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. Ryan continues.
I wanted to ask a question. You both have a vast knowledge of film history and frequently mention things about it on the show. I was wondering if you had any recommendations for books or curated lists of films that would help guide someone to gaining knowledge on film history and classic/arthouse films. Any thoughts you might have would be much appreciated.
Sure. Well, I'm a big fan of Danny Peary's cult movies books.
Those are cool books.
There are 3 of them.
Are they available?
They might be. I think they're on Kindle at the moment, actually.
Danny Peary.
P-E-A-R-Y. He also has a book that covers a lot more stuff and has sort of some of the shorter versions of the things that he writes in the cult books in an essential book called The Guide for the Film Fanatic that I highly recommend.
Yeah.
You know, the Hitchcock Truffaut book is great. It's, you know, 2 directors talking to each other about the craft of filmmaking. If you want to go really deep, a textbook that I used in a couple of different film classes that has become kind of a standard that people use is David Cook's A History of Narrative Film.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good place to start.
Sure. Yeah, there's all sorts of, you know, theory out there that you could read and critical stuff that you could read as well.
Ebert's books on the great movies is a good, you know, I don't agree with all of his choices, but he talks a lot about sort of great films that are worth watching.
Yeah.
You know, any of the Pauline Kael collections, obviously, if you want to start with 5001 Nights at the Movies.
I mean, if you want to read critics, you know, and that's always kind of a good place to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could read Manny Farber's Negative Space.
Yeah.
You could read, now I'm blanking on his name. Who was married to Molly?
Andrew Saris.
Andrew Saris.
Yeah. Harlan Ellison has a book called An Edge in My Voice that I think is really interesting. I like his stuff a lot.
That's a good beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
He continues, P.S. You mentioned on your show a few episodes back that if listeners don't agree with you politically, they should get out.
I think Dave said that.
I spoke for both of us.
Okay, fine.
Just.
You did.
As likely one of your few libertarian fans, I did want to throw out that we can peacefully disagree on an assortment of political issues and still have a good time talking about art. Can we, Ryan? Prove
maybe.
It.
Prove it.
Maybe we can. Let's wait and see.
I'd like to think so, but, you know, I'm hesitant.
Note, this was written in January, mm-hmm. pre-inauguration, so he continues, note, I do not support president-elect, or probably president by the time you read this, or any of his proposed disastrous policies either.
Well,
on this we agree.
There you go.
Yes. You know, destroy capitalism now. Ryan didn't say that, I said.
No, yes, let's be clear.
Okay.
Are we done?
Thank you, Ryan. We are friends.
We are. And thank you for listening. We
appreciate it. You cross us. Bless you.
Pardon.
We're done.
Okay. Yeah. Well, again, do check out our friend Ryan Downey's new show, Pop Curse, and go check out our other friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com and the Rotten Tomatoes podcast and the Schmoes Know. I am on Schmodown next week, and it was quite the experience. Which I really can't talk about,
until it
airs, so you'll just see for yourself.
I can't wait.
Anyway.
Is it on camera?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
It's a whole thing.
Nice.
Yeah. check out the B-Movies podcast and Canceled Too Soon, featuring Bibbs and Whitney.
Yes.
The Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley podcast, the Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, the Joe Al Ryan Thing, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, and Secretly Timid. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Go to Bluetopia.com for more on his work. BLEUTOPIA. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes and leave us a review. Those reviews make all the difference in the world. We appreciate those of you who have left them. And if you haven't yet, please go do that. It would help us a lot.
5 stars.
Yes. You can also leave us positive feedback all the places where our show streams, including Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Podbean, CastBox, Satchel, something called iVoox that I just found today, I-V-O-O-X.
Also Hoop Hoop.
and if you're listening to us on Android, you can get us on Google Play.
Buy a t-shirt.
Buy a t-shirt.
They cost $22. To linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes,
That's on PayPal.
It costs more if you live outside the U.S.
They're
so email
black, and they have the words linoleum knife in white letters across the chest.
If you live outside the U.S., email us first and find out how much extra the postage is.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at linoleumcast. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We're always open to your questions, comments, top 10 lists, whatever else. And if you have a vegan fried chicken recipe, you want to pass that along? Go right ahead.
Yeah, you have a really good vegan fried chicken recipe? Because I'll make it.
We'll see how that goes.
I'll make that. And then I'll talk about it on Linoleum Knife and Fork.
That's right, which is available over at patreon.com.
No, we already talked about
it. I'm just giving the address.
Okay.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We will catch you guys next time.
Goodbye.